This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. There's a reason Duke Integrative Medicine isn't called Duke Alternative Medicine. The care they provide is holistic, and it's based on the best practices of traditional Western medicine and those so-called alternative therapies like meditation, spiritual practice, and acupuncture. But integration almost always has a cost. Dr. Adam Perlman's job is to lower the price. He's the executive director of Duke Integrative Medicine and the new associate director of health and wellness for Duke Wellness. His earliest understanding of holistic health care came from studying martial arts. The body-mind connection helped him grow strong and stay well, but it was meeting with the renowned Harvard physician Dr. David Eisenberg that sent him into the world of integrative medicine. Now Dr. Perlman's goal is nothing less than changing the way members of the Duke community take care of themselves, and then he wants to change the way you take care of yourself. Dr. Adam Perlman joins me in the studio today. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
When I say integrative medicine, what am I talking about? What does that mean?
Well, it's a good question. I think people tend to define it differently, and I think the public often is not clear on what it means. I think perhaps the best way to think about it is it's a particular approach to the care of patients. So that approach really puts the patient at the center. It addresses a full range of sort of physical, emotional, mental, social, spiritual, even environmental influences that affect health. It's an inclusive approach, so it combines sort of the best of Western scientific medicine with what I would call an openness to, proven is perhaps too strong of a word, but evidence-based complementary therapies to address the whole person, mind, body, and spirit. And then finally, I think there is a focus on really addressing all aspects and not only treating disease, but really optimizing health as a goal. And I think that in some ways at times differentiates it from a purely conventional approach.
And you have just used the term complementary medicine, and you started something called complementary medicine, and we're working on that just before you came here. How is that distinct, and what role does it play?
Sure. Again, I think the three terms that are most familiar to people, alternative medicine, which you mentioned I think earlier in the introduction, is probably the one that people seem to recognize the most. The reason we chose not to use that is it really implies an abandonment of conventional care in favor of some alternative that often is less tested, less proven, has less science behind it. So then people started using the term complementary, which, as I understand it, is still the term that's most popular in Europe and England. And I guess the implication there is that you're using things outside of mainstream medicine, acupuncture, herbs, what have you, to complement the conventional care, the Western biomedicine that you may also be receiving. And certainly for many individuals that integrate, if you will, complementary modalities into their care, that's the way they do it. They may see their doctor for low back pain and may get a prescription and then on their own see the chiropractor or get some acupuncture. But often there isn't a conversation around what they're actually doing. And that isn't really an integration of care into the system so that care is coordinated, which is often the best way, obviously, or is the best way, ideally, to treat a patient. And again, it doesn't get at that bigger approach to the care of patients with the patient at the center and this real partnering that those of us interested in integrative medicine really focus on.
What role did David Eisenberg play in the evolution of this kind of medicine?
So David is a researcher at Harvard. He had one of the first NIH, National Institutes of Health, funded centers to specifically study complementary medicine. Originally, the NIH, that was an Office of Alternative Medicine, and David was actually even on the advisory board there, and he wrote a grant and was able to fund that center and has done some very impressive work. Probably one of the most important pieces of work he did was a study that was published in New England Journal in 1993, and what he basically showed at that point was that around one-third of the population in any given year in the previous 12 months, let's say, were using some form of complementary and alternative medicine, acupuncture, herbs, what have you. And I think prior to that article coming out, the public, healthcare providers, the media hadn't really recognized how prevalent the use of complementary medicine was. So it was really after that study that you saw a great deal of interest in that whole area.
And that's where, as you say, if that's really happening, it'd be good if your primary care physician knew about that and then knew how to give you some guidance.
Exactly. And I think that certainly has been part of my interest is that, and part of what I've been involved in is that even if you're not recommending or, let's say, advocating for any of the modalities that may fall under this sort of rubric of complementary medicine, as a physician, we need to be familiar with the things that people use so that we can engage in that conversation. I mean, certainly if one-third of every patient coming into my office was potentially using something outside of mainstream medicine, I'd want to be aware of that and have a dialogue with them about that.
A lot of people have heard of Dr. Andrew Weil. Tell us about his practice and whether or not that counts as integrative medicine, or that's what you would call integrative medicine.
It certainly does. In fact, although I think I've heard Dr. Weil say this isn't necessarily true, the story that I heard was that he is the one who coined the term integrative medicine, or that came out of his program at the University of Arizona, where they started one of the first fellowship training programs for physicians in integrative medicine. And if David Eisenberg was one of the earlier leaders in research on integrative complementary medicine, I would say that Andrew Weil, what he has done is really bring much more recognition to the public. So through the books that he's written and also has been a leader in the training of physicians through the fellowship program.
What about, so let's get a clearer picture of what would happen if I were somehow enrolled at Duke Integrative Medicine. What would that mean? How would my care be different than if I weren't?
Sure. So I think, first of all, just to be clear, Duke Integrative Medicine does a great deal of research. We're involved in a great deal of education to the public. We have a number of training programs, particularly in integrative health coach training, where we're probably one of the leaders in the country. I'm one of the leaders in the country. So there's a lot that we do in Duke Integrative Medicine. But if you're referring specifically to the clinical aspects of what we do, then there are a number of things that we offer. And again, if you've ever been to that building, you know it's a beautiful healing environment, a building that's won a number of awards for its attempt to bring nature into the building. And there's this whole concept of really creating a place where healing can happen. So that's one aspect of it. But first of all, there are physician services. And the physician services, up until recently, have been largely fee-for-service. So we did not take insurance. We really made a very deliberate decision to take insurance so we could become much more accessible to people. And so as of March 15th, we take insurance and we provide integrative medicine consultations. So again, it's a very comprehensive approach looking at all the aspects I had mentioned before. I think that one of the things that we're looking to do, if I can just digress for a minute, in integrative medicine is really implement and assess successful methodologies that transform the health trajectory for the individual. I would say for the community and the healthcare system as well. And I think that that's where we tend to differentiate ourselves, is this focus on transforming the health trajectory so that people are going to a place of optimized health, their disease states are treated, but also they are feeling as good as they can feel, but that we use methodologies beyond purely biomedicine. So a lot of what you would experience is a conventional medical assessment.
You know, but I have to stop you there. I want to know what you mean when you say improving the health trajectory.
Sure.
What does that mean?
Well, so we all have this health trajectory, right? I mean, in some ways, the ultimate endpoint is the same for all of us. I mean, people have said sort of death is a chronic disease that you catch the day you're born. But how do we get there? And it was interesting to listen a few weeks ago to the professor you had on who works with the fish.
Oh, the zebrafish.
Yeah. And hear him talk about how we're improving our ability to understand the probabilities, let's say, of developing a particular condition. And that's by looking at our genes and our genomic sequencing. And increasingly, we're getting better at not only identifying what you might be at risk of developing, but then figuring out what is it going to take to change that trajectory. So that's part of what I mean. I mean, sometimes we have a sense of what that is. Other times, you may have diabetes, and we know that if you have diabetes, you're at risk for heart disease, you're at risk for kidney disease, other issues. So that's sort of the trajectory that I'm referring to. How can we change the place that you might be heading to from a health perspective, but not only where you get to, but how you get there? So the health that you experience on your way there, and that's more than just physical. That needs to happen on a physical, on a mental, emotional, on a spiritual level. So that's really what I was referring to. And then the methodologies that we use, as I was saying, are certainly cutting-edge biomedical. I mean, we order the same tests, x-rays, blood work, and when I have students that come into my office, as I do often, they want to ultimately pursue integrative medicine, I tell them the first thing to do is become the best conventional physician you can be. But then we also look closely at how we might utilize the mind-body connection, how we might integrate some of the complementary medicine that we were just referring to, like acupuncture, massage. We look at the concepts of healing environment and how that might impact on care, the concept of mindfulness, and how that might, again, come into a person's life and help them if they could be more mindful to ultimately have a healthier lifestyle. We use what I would consider to be a little bit of the, if you will, secret sauce for Duke Integrative Medicine, which is not only the mindfulness that's kind of core to what we do, but also these personalized health plans that we've developed, which is really your roadmap, if you will, to better health, sort of like you plan for retirement. You're planning for your health into the future. It's a document that you develop in partnership with your physician. And often in conjunction with the use of an integrative health coach. And for me, I would say understanding what a health coach does has been one of the bigger epiphanies I've had since coming to Duke, and I've only been here since September. And I had a sense of what a health coach did. I have been doing integrative medicine for 15 years, but I hadn't worked as closely with health coaches. But what I've come to learn is what they really do is they're involved in this concept of patient engagement and activation. So they really can help someone to engage or really understand where they want to get to from a health perspective, how it ties into their bigger values and bigger goals in life. And then the activation piece is really how do they implement the plan that they're developing with their health providers.
We'll talk more about that, Duke Integrative Medicine, and how you got there. Dr. Adam Perlman, my guest today on The State of Things. A conversation continues on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today I'm talking with Dr. Adam Perlman, Executive Director of Duke Integrative Medicine and the new Associate Director of Health and Wellness for Duke Wellness. So just recently, then Duke Integrative Medicine offered primary care component, and I have to say I signed up for that. And I also have to say there's a kind of a $1,500 fee that you pay, so it's not exactly like primary care you'd get anywhere else. And I have a lot of questions about that, just in terms of what I had to go through in my own mind, saying, man, am I going to pay an extra $1,500 over and above my insurance and copay and everything else, you know, to be part of this kind of primary care? So tell me a little bit about it. Why is it important to get into primary care? And how is it different than other primary care practice?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. And it's an exciting development for us and exciting for me personally because, you know, for many years, and I've been, as I've said, been 15 years now with an integrative practice, but I haven't done primary care. And it's been challenging to do that. To see primary care become a part of Duke Integrative Medicine is exciting for all of us that are involved there. I mean, I think I'll step back and say that it's challenging to do integrative medicine and take insurance because our initial visits are typically an hour. We schedule our follow-up visits at a half an hour. To do what you and I started talking about earlier in terms of this more comprehensive assessment, it takes time. And we're also very focused on really partnering with our patients, and you need to get beyond, you need time to do that. You need to get beyond the basic, you know, what was your glucose level, what's your blood pressure today.
And just to put that in perspective, I think the average visit then for a follow-up visit with your primary under your insurance plan, the average insurance plan is half of that, right? It's not half an hour, it's 15 minutes, 12 minutes.
Sure, I mean, with primary care now, it depends on what the visit is for, but it could be a 7-11 minute visit. You know, nowadays, there's great pressure on many primary care physicians to sort of keep up a certain level of volume. Mm. Now, hopefully, some of that will get a little easier if healthcare reform comes through in a way that emphasizes primary care. But that aside, it's certainly challenging. Mm. And there has been an increasing squeeze of the time that most primary care physicians can spend with their patient.
And just to underline that, that's why you were reluctant to take, or Duke Integrative Medicine was reluctant to take insurance before. They're just not going to cover it, those insurance payments.
Well, that's correct. And that it's just hard to be self-sustaining financially. And really, ultimately, what we want at Duke Integrative Medicine is to be a part of the transformation of healthcare. And there is no doubt that our model has significant impact on the individuals that come through the door. And we've been doing it for years and we've done research on it. We know that, you know, if the outcomes are there, the question is, can you make it fit into the conventional system so it becomes more accessible for people? So in doing that and looking at the primary care model, we did decide initially to go with a sort of a membership model. So there is, as you've mentioned, this $125 a month.
Call now.
Call it right. Yeah, or a $1,500 fee. Yeah. Part of that was because we wanted to add into the practice certain aspects that we felt very strongly were important for patients to really fully deal with really many of the common health issues that people deal with or really optimize their health. So what people are getting in a first and foremost, and initially we have two physicians dedicated to this practice. So first and foremost, they are getting excellent conventionally trained physicians. Both of the physicians have had additional training fellowships in integrative medicine. So they come with that credential as well. But then beyond that, you know, again, healthcare doesn't necessarily happen. Health issues don't happen 9 to 5 or 8 to 4. And sometimes you need an answer when you need an answer. And we also wanted to help people avoid going to the emergency rooms when it wasn't necessary. So as a part of this model, there'll be increased access to your healthcare team, 24/7 access to the healthcare team. But beyond that, we've also built in a couple of aspects that as I was mentioning earlier, that we feel is so important to help people really engage and activate their care. So really understand what they're doing and then implement that plan. One is access to a group health coaching format. So 5 group health coaching sessions per year that is really an opportunity for you to work on your personalized health plan, which is another thing that you'll work on with your physician. Roadmap that I was referring to earlier, that's a fairly extensive document that looks at your risk and where you want to go and your goals and tries to chart that course for you. The health coach piece is an opportunity to refine that, but then also really implement that plan with someone who is really trained and educated on how to do that, how to connect with you and help you to implement that plan. So we have that. You have, again, the access. There's also access to the healing environment, to the building that, you know, we've very deliberately created there to really help people to see what you can do when you actually work on your environment and create an environment that's really geared towards healing.
It's interesting because I talked about the thought process that I went through in making the decision. And part of it was, again, there was this fee that told me, that reminded me and underscored my privilege, the fact that I can afford elite health care. Makes sense to me, so I'll say that up front. Integrative health, the concept makes perfect sense to me, so why not? The $1,500, I can do that. Other people can't, and that was the stumbling block for me. I'm thinking to myself, why isn't this medicine? Why is this a special kind of medicine, and why isn't this available to everybody? And so the hope is that if this becomes more widespread and the data starts to show insurance companies and others how effective it is, it ultimately becomes medicine and not integrative medicine.
That's exactly right. I mean, again, I came out of Newark, New Jersey, and, you know, was working with a very underserved population. But we, by and large, had to get either grant money or philanthropic support to try to help integrate some of these principles into low-income housing units and other places where we were doing work in Newark. Our goal at Duke Integrative Medicine is to be accessible to all. And we're working on trying to develop some scholarships and whatnot. But in the short run, we wanted to find a way that was more fiscally responsible but allowed us to take insurance and expand access to many individuals, even if it isn't ultimately where we want to get to. It's where we're working towards a broader
It seems to me your first challenge is to heal Duke medicine. I mean, in a sense that's not the way things are done at Duke in terms of their primary care. Is that part of your goal, part of your mission, is to say, you know, right here at Duke medicine, this isn't the way we do things? It is a campus. It's a beautiful campus. It doesn't look anything like the rest of, and it doesn't operate any of that. Will you be sort of an oasis and a kind of an object lesson study group, or is there a plan to sort of make Duke Medicine look more like Duke Integrative Medicine?
Right. So I guess, first of all, part of what you're referring to is that we're off on the Center for Living campus, which is on Irwin Road. We're not on the main Duke campus.
Right.
And, you know, that's where our building is. First of all, I want to say I think Duke Primary Care does a wonderful job. I don't have any problem with the way Duke Primary Care does what they do. I've been here only a short while, and I've been very impressed with what I've seen with the quality of care, and get my care and my wife and our family get our care through regular Duke Primary Care at the moment. I would say that what we're trying to do is be a part of an evolution. And I think, in all fairness, what integrative medicine has not done well yet, except to individuals like yourself, but to the bigger system, is to define our value proposition. And that sounds very business-like, perhaps, but that is the way I've been speaking and speaking, you know, to administration at Duke, that we need to do a better job of defining our value proposition so that Duke and other health systems, healthcare systems, and the greater system can understand, where does integrative medicine fit? Where does it bring value? And in healthcare, value is typically defined, as you know, as improving outcomes and lowering cost. And we're doing some of the research to try to look at that, as are others all across the country.
But really, the medical system is not set up to improve outcomes. At this point, the way the cash register is rigged, it's that there are certain procedures that command a certain fee, and some of them are easier to do than others. And so that's where you find a smart physician going, because I can get 9 of you in a day and have a nurse take care of you, and in and out you go, and the colonoscopies are done, and I can charge for that, and insurance will pay. Outcomes aren't as important. Nobody gets paid more because outcomes were better, not in the personal level and certainly not at the community level. Nobody gets a premium for saying our community is more healthy than yours.
Now, Frank, that's a very cynical attitude. I would say that it's a fair statement that traditionally, the current system has been, by and large, a reimbursement system. We tend to do what we get reimbursed for. But we can sort of smell the winds of change, if you will. And again, the current political climate notwithstanding, I mean, the healthcare reform bill, to a large degree, the ship has left already. And we can't really turn back the recognition that we need to focus more on prevention, that we need to allow primary care docs, for example, to spend more time or involve other allied health professionals, nursing and other allied health professionals and CAM professionals in the care of patients and take more of a team-based approach to care. I mean, there are a number of things that need to happen to shift the system. I think the recognition is there, but it's going to be slow because there are sort of financial disincentives, if you will, to the way things to change.
How did you get involved in medicine? What first attracted you to the profession?
Well, I would almost say lifelong exposure to medicine. My grandfather actually started a hospital back when you could do that, when you could just sort of buy a house. And then I think they bought a second house. And I heard that they used to like do the surgery in one room and then one house and then wheel you outside under a tarp to the recovery room and in the other, which is, this was like the 1940s. And my grandfather passed away about 40 years ago. And my father, who was actually, this was my grandfather on my mother's side, but my father, who was a young lawyer, stepped in to help run the hospital. So I kind of grew up. I was born there. I grew up in the hospital. I met my wife there. Of course, at the time I was doing maintenance, I had no thoughts of being a physician. I was trimming the bushes. And I'm glad
they didn't call you in to do surgery.
That's right.
Somebody didn't show up.
Wasn't doing any of that. But I wasn't sure what I wanted to do for a career, and I was actually a history major, and what I was really into was martial arts. I had started when I was 16 years old, and this wasn't sort of the MMA cage stuff that you see now. It was more about the art form and about self-development physically, mentally, discipline, and really understanding, I think, one's potential. And I think I got very interested by the health aspects. We would learn different things about sort of traditional foods that one might eat. The master of the style I did was Korean, but the style itself was Chinese, and different things that you might, even forms you would do for health that might, stretches for the lower back, things like that. And I did start to wonder why we didn't integrate more of, at the time, the way I thought about it, things that came from other healing traditions into the conventional system. And I certainly was very interested in lifestyle and recognized that, you know, at a core, we need to be eating right and exercising regularly and managing stress. So sort of late, I can almost still remember that call to my parents where I said, you know, I was like a junior in college. I actually already got accepted to law school and decided, it was the end of my junior year, beginning of my senior, I said, you know, I think it's going to be medical school. So I deferred my admission to law school and went and started all the pre-med right after I graduated, did it all post-baccalaureate, and ended up going to Boston University and whatnot. So, but I went really with my, at the time, and, you know, we're talking 20 years ago, I would say my secret agenda being this interest in integration of an integrative medicine. The term didn't even exist back then, but, right. but integration.
Well, how, and did you have to keep it a secret? That gives us an idea of the trajectory of integrative medicine over 20 years.
You did back then. Yeah. In fact, I was at a research conference. Interesting to see how the whole field has developed. I was at a research conference about a month ago in Portland, Oregon, sponsored by this consortium of academic health centers for integrative medicine, which is about 50 medical schools, 50 academic centers that all have integrative programs. And it's Duke was one of the founding members, but it's Harvard, it's Georgetown, it's UCSF, it's Yale. And this conference had over 1,000 people from 30 different countries. And one of the, I was asked to speak at a sort of junior investigators luncheon and sort of reflect upon, you know, my career, so to speak. And it was interesting to remember that when I was finishing up my general medicine research fellowship, I finally decided to tell my boss at the time, who was the section chief of general internal medicine, that I was interested in this integrative medicine and maybe doing some research, but also clinical. And he basically said, "You'll never have a career. No one's going to hire you to do that." And in retrospect, it was probably legitimate advice because there was no clear career path. There was no consortium with 50 medical right. schools. There was no conferences with 1,000 people from 30 countries. So I think as a young physician just finishing up a research fellowship, he gave me very sound advice. But fortunately, I was right on the cusp of sort of right time, right place, right time.
What happened? What happened to prove him wrong?
Well, one thing that happened was that I had become friendly with David Eisenberg. I had met him at Harvard I'd stayed at BU to do my fellowship, but we knew each other. He knew of my aspirations, if you will, my desire to try to develop an integrative medicine center. I thought we could do this in a conventional medical setting. And he was on the advisory board at the Office of Alternative Medicine at the time at the National Institutes of Health with a gentleman named Dr. Richard Panish, who was the chair of medicine for the St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey. And they had just gotten a relatively small but gift to start up an integrative program and wanted to get something rolling, and they were looking for someone, and the term was like brand new, even as a term. And one day, Rich Panish leaned over to David and said, "You know, we have this great opportunity. Do you know anyone?" And David said, "Well, this guy, Adam Perlman, he's kind of young, but he's finishing up a research fellowship, and this is what he's dreamed of doing." So next thing you know, long story short, probably about 3 months later, I think my time, it was my wife and our three kids were...
Because you got five now.
I have five. Five beautiful children, but we were, on the road to New Jersey. So
that's, for you, how this happened and your sort of personal trajectory. What's happening in the field of medicine to allow physicians and hospitals and others to take this more seriously? Is it data? Is it research? Is it just a hunger for needing another way of doing things?
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit sort of my reflection on the history here. There's probably an article that needs to be written, or maybe it has been and I haven't read it. I think one thing happened was that David Eisenberg's article came out in 93, New England Journal. Part of what that article showed is that people are spending, and I forget the exact number, $23, $26 billion out of pocket. And of course, healthcare was, perhaps still is, or is, struggling with issues around reimbursement and whatnot. And I think many in healthcare said, "Oh my goodness, people are spending this much money out of pocket. Maybe there's something here," and saw the dollar signs. And so around that time, or shortly after, you actually saw a number of integrative centers pop up across the country. And I don't think there was a real commitment to the core values of integrative medicine, to be very honest with you. And it used to be a little sad. We used to joke. It wasn't really funny. But you would go to these conferences back in those days, and it was kind of like that law school joke, look left, look right, someone won't be here at the end of the semester sitting next to you. And, it was like that. You would go back to a conference and, where's John? Oh, you didn't hear, their center closed. And because it really, it's not the goose that laid the golden egg. And as we already talked about earlier, it doesn't fit well with reimbursement. And although people at times are willing to spend out of pocket, in general, people want their health care covered by insurance. And so it created a lot of challenges. I think a number of us were able to survive through those days and come up with models that really did bring value and were often viewed as a value added And in that regard, we were able to survive. And I think simultaneously, the body of research literature began not only to grow, but the quality of the research began to improve, because there's been a fairly large body of literature out there for a number of years. But when you really peeled the onion, it was often studies that were small and of poor methodologic quality. I think what you're seeing now, partly through increased funding for institutions like the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, which is under the National Institutes of Health, that has, you know, a $110 million budget, the National Cancer Institute, which spends hundreds of millions itself on just complementary medicine-related and cancer research, and also what's happening even internationally, that the not only the volume but the quality of research has improved. So for a number of years, all I would hear was, you know, show me the randomized control trials, show me the good research. And I think that's what you hear much less now. And what I think I'm feeling and seeing now is a bit of a resurgence, and I think this is somewhat coming out of healthcare reform and the recognition that we do need to emphasize many of the principles that were inherent to an integrative approach, like lifestyle and prevention, and a bit of a more holistic approach and a less fragmented approach, that healthcare systems are now really interested in taking another look, but we need to define that value proposition for them.
I'm talking this hour with Dr. Adam Perlman, Executive Director of Duke's Integrative Medicine and the new Associate Director of Health and Wellness for Duke Wellness. After a short break, we'll talk about what health policy means for integrative medicine. We'll do it on the State of Things. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. My guest this hour, Dr. Adam Perlman, Executive Director of Duke Integrative Medicine and the new Associate Director of Health and Wellness for Duke Wellness. You talked about those papers that came out in the 90s, and we all know now how expensive medicine is in the United States. We pay three times per capita what the rest of the developed world does. Our outcomes are the worst in the developed world for medical care, and then all the money that's spent on complementary and alternative therapies on top of that. Why is it so expensive?
Well, we certainly have a heavy reliance on expensive, you know, cutting-edge technologies, and although our health outcomes in general are not what they should be in certain areas, we do extremely well. But we don't emphasize prevention enough. We don't emphasize lifestyle enough. And in fact, I think it's the CDC has estimated that about 75% of the dollars that we spend on healthcare in this country are for chronic diseases that are preventable. Issues like obesity, heart disease, diabetes, which are largely preventable and attributable to really unhealthy lifestyles.
How would you change that? I mean, again, you're going to get back. I'll take us back to my cynical proposition that just the way it's rigged now, you get paid for treatment. That's the only way the drawer opens, the cash register. So, I mean, yeah, it's cynical to say you have to have the disease before I can get paid. So in other words, how would you change things so that people could get paid and make a living by keeping you well?
Yeah. Well, so from a system-wide perspective, things are changing. So the system is shifting to where not only providers but hospitals and systems will be reimbursed based on quality markers. And I think that's a real shift that is not going to turn around, and it's in the process of being implemented. But already there's a lot of work going on to really look at quality of care. And I think it's really was necessary to really make the shift, is that we got to tie the dollars in to the outcomes that we want and the quality of care and into the prevention of chronic diseases and disease in general. And so incentives are being worked into the system. I think one of the answers, in my opinion, is that, again, we need to take a more team-based approach to care. So it's too much to put it on the backs of the physicians, quite frankly. I mean, there's so many issues, the societal issues. It's everything from supersizing things to too much TV and video games. But from the healthcare system's perspective, it needs to be less MD-centric. And that's not to diminish what physicians do in any sense, but that there's just too much that we need to accomplish. I believe very strongly that one of the answers is a more team-based approach, and in particular, incorporation of the health coaches. And, you know, just to circle back to what we've been talking about earlier with the primary care model and this access to health coaches that we're putting in there, and that's largely because people really need someone who can help them to think deeply about their health, the outcomes that they hope to accomplish, and then how they're going to get there. And it's in that implementation of that plan that the system often breaks down. So I can have a conversation with someone and say, look, and even take the hour and go through their nutrition and the exercise they need to do and managing stress and the medications and all of that. And then I say, I'll see you again in 4 to 6 weeks. And they're really left largely on their own, even with an integrative practice, to try to implement all of these things. And so where other healthcare providers, in this case a health coach, is trained to do that, can step in as to, in really on that piece of the puzzle in how do we then implement the plan and assure that we're ultimately heading towards the outcomes that we want.
One of the criticisms of integrative care is the various levels of what research and data. So if I'm the coach and I'm recommending a few kinds of therapies, which would include traditional medicine and what we would call alternative, the kinds of qualitative evidence I have about meditation or acupuncture is fundamentally different than what the evidence that I have about particular medicines or surgical procedures, for instance. How do you negotiate that? And is it a kind of an ethical problem to have one individual sort of making recommendations with the qualitative differences in the research?
So again, a couple of things. Just to be clear, the integrative health coach is really a part of the healthcare team where you as the patient are at the head of your team and in partnership certainly with your physician. So very often it is the physician, the nurse practitioner, other allied health professionals, the nutritionist that are making those recommendations. And the coach is coming in, not that they may not have their own ideas, but they're really helping you, because it's ultimately you that decide, yes, I do want to do this or I don't, helping you to really implement that plan. The other thing I would say is that although one might think we have a great deal of evidence for all that we do in healthcare, we really don't. And in fact, I forget the latest estimates, but maybe there's 30 to 40% of the things we do in medicine have well-done randomized controlled trials to support their efficacy. And many things we do may even be an off-label use of a particular medication. Evidence-based medicine or making evidence-based clinical decisions does not mean, and many medical students and even I think healthcare providers and physicians confuse this, it does not mean making our decisions or helping to guide our patients based on large randomized controlled trials, which is the gold standard. It means using the best evidence available, coupled by clinical expertise and experience and a patient's own preferences and expectations. So in that regard, if that is the model, which I believe it is, or a model of evidence-based clinical decision-making, integrative approaches can fit in equally well. Ultimately, for many of us, it's not about trying to be integrative or complementary, alternative or conventional. It's just about trying to provide good medicine, and we're just expanding the list of methodologies that we're comfortable looking at and considering.
You got a master's in public health. How did you see that as part of the picture overall for you? And how does it, or does it, play a part in your understanding of integrative medicine?
Well, I think, you know, my master's is in public health. I have a concentration in biostatistics and epidemiology. So a big part of it was to be able to answer questions like the one you just put to me and really know what I'm talking about. I think a big part of my motivation to even do a research fellowship and be involved in research the way I am now was the recognition that despite what I just said, we continue to need more research, better research. What is talked about now that I don't know if people always understand, comparative effectiveness research, cost effectiveness research, so we can understand not only what the role may be in acupuncture in treating chemotherapy-induced nausea or massage in osteoarthritis of the knee, which is my research, but not only the impact clinically, but what the impact is on that bottom line and how it compares to other treatments that we may recommend in a setting.
Will integrative, can integrative medicine bring the overall cost of healthcare down?
That is I don't know how much, the $1 trillion question, whatever.
And
we're
growing.
Saying, right,
yeah.
And growing. I think there is a real interest finally in trying to answer that question. I think it is a part of the puzzle. The whole debate on, you know, putting more emphasis on prevention and lifestyle and whatnot needs to happen regardless of the ultimate effect on the bottom line. I think that's pretty clear to people. Quantifying the impact on that bottom line, quantifying the value proposition is what many of us across the country are working on at the moment.
How many integrative centers are there these days, or roughly?
Well, so I can't answer exactly how many centers. It depends what you're referring to. What I can tell you is that there are roughly 50, maybe 51 now academic medical centers that have integrative programs. There are many private integrative or holistic health centers, certainly. It depends how you sort of define it. And I don't know the most recent count, but the majority of medical schools integrate some curriculum on this topic into their medical school curriculum.
And what kind of research? You talked about the research that's done at Duke Integrative Medicine. What kind? What are you looking at?
So we've done, I would say, again, as I mentioned, we're one of the leading educators of integrative health coaches, and we've certainly done some of the leading research to look at the impact of integrative health coaches on the care of diabetics, for example. My current research is a little different. I actually am working on, it's my third study, it's a three-center study looking at the benefits of massage for osteoarthritis of the knee. And we're doing that here, and then we have a center at Yale and in New Jersey.
One of your titles is Health and Wellness for Duke Wellness. What's your goal there?
Yeah, actually, it's Associate Vice President for Health and Wellness for the Duke system, Duke Health System.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, again, I think in creating that position, which Victor Zhao and Bill Fulkerson, in creating that position, I think it was a recognition of Duke's commitment to the broader concept of health and wellness. And part of what the mandate that came along with that was to look at our efforts in the space of health and wellness. So that's everything from Duke Integrative Medicine, Duke Dyack Center, our fitness center, other aspects of health and wellness, and see where we can really, I think, expand those efforts. I would also say that part of that is looking at what we do right at home, because I feel very strongly that you need to walk the walk if you're going to sort of talk the talk. So I couldn't be having this conversation with you or with a patient if I wasn't getting to the gym and trying to eat healthfully and trying to manage stress myself. And likewise, I don't think that Duke can really have the impact that it wants on the health of our community if it isn't doing the same sort of thing. So looking at what our employees currently do, which we do have a number of efforts, but expanding those efforts around health and wellness to really create a culture where health and wellness is really embraced is what I'm interested in trying to help to really accomplish.
What about insurance companies? What role do they play either in facilitating integrative management, integrative medicine, or in some ways, is it an obstacle? And if you're thinking about the way procedures are coded, if you look at the digestive system as the liver, the pancreas, the gallbladder, and they want to know, no, liver is liver, and that's this code. And is that a problem? It's just sort of working with insurance companies a barrier in some ways to implementing.
Well, I think it's a barrier and an opportunity. And again, I don't want to be overly cynical here. Certainly insurance companies do care about the health of their constituents, but at the end of the day, they have a bottom line that they need to worry about. And so it goes back to what I've been saying, I think repeatedly now, which is that for the insurance company, we need to define the value proposition for integrative medicine. I think if we can show, and we're trying to do this, ideally we would do this with certain sort of pilot projects initially, take a cohort of patients that may have issues with weight or may have diabetes, and show that in an integrative fashion, which means, again, the best of conventional coupled with other methodologies, that we can improve health outcomes and lower costs, then I would imagine they are going to be lining up to pay for that sort of an approach to the care of patients. So those are the kind of conversations that we're trying to engage in now and the kind of pilot projects that we're trying to look at. And we see some of it. We see success happening slowly across the country.
You talk about sort of walking the walk when it comes to Duke and trying to see how these methods map on the entire Duke system. I mean, Duke is not just the health system, but all of Duke is something like 33,000 employees, if you include the university. That's a lot. Do you have a plan? How do you plan to go about this?
So I've only been here 10 months, I think it is now.
And what's taken you so long?
And I think I've had that title for 2 months now. But, the good news is that Duke is already doing quite a bit to try to target its employees and help its employees to develop a healthier life. And so it's not like I'm coming in and there's a blank slate. I think my goal would be to try to bring together interested parties throughout the system, because as you said, it is a large system, and to say, okay, what are we doing now? What's working well? And where do we need to get some more traction? And how do we go about doing that? So that's the plan. It's still formulating. But again, from my perspective, to see that right up through the higher levels of administration, Duke is really committed to really moving forward in this space, I think was exciting for me.
You are one of six children. You have five kids yourself. Do big families contribute to robust health?
Well, that's interesting because, yes, my wife, Larissa, and I, we have five children. If I can remember that, no, Sarah. Sarah, don't ask their birthdays, but Sarah, Benjamin, Matt, Rebecca, and Charlie. And so hopefully they were listening. And there is actually some interesting work that has shown that, and I think it was done in physicians, that physicians with five children tend to have more balance in life. And I will say that the children and my wife really do help me to be balanced. I think it is easy for all of us to get caught up in the work that we do, particularly when we feel passionate about what we do, and I, as I certainly do about you know, my opportunity here at Duke. And it's easy to just stay in the office all day and late into the evening, and I think the thing that often pulls me out is that I need to get home and see the kids or see my wife. And so it is important to recognize, to me that's an issue of spirituality. I've sort of, and recognize that what's important in your life and to make sure to have that balance and that purpose and meaning is not lost. And I think my wife and I had five children because, not that all need to have five, but that for us, it was a big part of how we define our spirituality, how we define sort of what's really important for us, and we make sure that that priority is never lost.
It's interesting because that gets back to the idea of the health coach and the amount of time you would spend with a primary and talking about these very things, which don't always get included in your visit with the doctor when they're really concerned about what tests to recommend and then how to evaluate those. Very important work, and it's hard work. Not a lot of time for these larger conversations, which in many ways, and now more and more research indicates, do have a bearing on your health.
Yeah, I've been sort of intrigued with this concept that I'm kind of calling expanded connectivity. I think that's one thing that those of us in integrative medicine are interested in, expanded connectiveness, connectivity. And it really is the idea that things like, if I don't have enough time with my children or my wife, I don't have the life that I want for myself. And I may not recognize that. I don't have the health or the concept of healing. See, healing, actually, the Latin root means to make whole. And so many times, as a healthcare provider, I can treat a disease. I can treat diabetes so that the glucose is what it should be, or the hemoglobin A1C. But it doesn't mean that that person has that sense of healing in their life, that sense of wholeness, because there may be many other things that connect to that that I just may not be aware of because I haven't had the conversation. More importantly, they may not be aware of because they haven't had the conversation with themselves or with someone who can help them to connect to that level of understanding.
So we do more time in financial planning than we do sometimes in health planning, and if you're not alive to spend it at the end of that retirement, all was for naught.
Exactly.
Great to talk with you. So much. Great pleasure. Dr. Adam Perlman.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Adam Perlman is Executive Director of Duke Integrative Medicine, Associate Vice President for Health and Wellness at Duke University Healthcare System. For more information, go to DukeIntegrativeMedicine.org. Hey, we're coming to you from Greensboro live on Friday. Liz Seymour, writer, anarchist, and director of a shelter for people who are homeless called the Interactive Resource Center. You can be in the audience at Triad Stage in Greensboro this Friday by sending us an email, RSVP at WUNC.org. Friday, June 22nd, Liz Seymour is going to be there. Hope to see you at the Triad Stage in Greensboro this Friday. Send us an email. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.